Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yeah, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Some interesting topics that have come up this morning. The idea that that rust diseases might actually be good for your tomato production, not so much the production. It doesn't seem to affect production. Figs. Figs are an interesting thing, and it's important to understand this. Figs, the figs we eat, are not fruit. They're flowers. The difference between a flower and a fruit is kind of tricky at times, right? But in this case, the figs we eat are essentially flowers. They're compound flowers. How do I describe a compound flower? A hydrangea is a compound flower, for example. It's got a bunch of little flowers in one place in a single head. That's a kind of a compound flower. A sunflower, that's a compound flower. Because if you look at a sunflower, it looks like one big flower, but that's just to sort of fake the insects off. It's got all these little petals around the side. The little flowers, if you look at a sunflower, just take an annual sunflower. The real flowers are all of those little things that produce seeds in the middle of that disc. That disc may have, count them sometime. It may have 100 little flowers in it or more. And it's those little flowers that attract the insects. That's a compound flower. A fig has a compound flower too. It is a compound flower. Except the flowers are inside the fig. This is where it gets fun. A wasp has to go inside that fig to pollinate it. Right? that's right. It's a fig wasp. It goes inside that fruit, and it lays its eggs inside. It's what that little eye is on the fig. It goes inside. It lays its eggs inside that fig. You don't mind that. That's not a problem. It's just laying its eggs. And then all those little creatures come out. All the little baby, we'll politely call them wasp larvae. And they start eating the flower petals inside the fig. Now, listen. Here's the good thing. Just because those little larvae are eating the flowers inside your fig, nothing to worry about. They're little. It's just tiny little pieces of poop. Doesn't bother you at all, does it? So there it is. All this is going on, and that stimulates the fig. That stimulates the fig to start producing the male flowers and female flowers inside. Then those little creatures, the little larvae, hatch out and they fly and carry the pollen to another plant. That's how it works. And the mother may die inside the fig, but that's okay. She decomposes pretty well. Doesn't that make you want to eat figs? Well, here's the important thing. We don't have fig wasp. We don't have the fig wasp. If you buy your figs from say Turkey or places where figs are native, from Italy, them fine Italian figs, that's how they get pollinated. You don't mind the poop though. The Italians have been eating it for years. Doesn't bother them at all. But your figs don't have the fig wasp. So, they're just flowers. They've never become fruit. And that's good. They don't develop seeds. You don't get that little gritty kind of thing you get with, if you've ever eaten a dried fig from, you get that grittiness. And that's not wasp poop. That's actually the seeds. It's funny how all that works. So, but here's the thing. Let's make it clear. We don't have fig wasp, so we don't have that problem. Unless you get a fig that has a big eye, that has a big little hole and magnolia is one of those. I know it sounds awful romantic and wonderful to have a fig named Magnolia. But boy, are you going to regret it. Because that little eye hole, everything crawls in there. It's not just wasp, it's everything else. And they all and die and get moldy in there. And it's just, oh man, it's really bad. So you want a fig. The classic figs for us are brown turkey, and Celeste. And I will tell you, it is really hard. I have never found a fig that's better. I've found some pretty good ones. Found some pretty good ones that are distinctive, and they have their uses. But brown turkey and Celeste are, for us, the classic figs. They're flowers. They never actually get pollinated. They never turn into fruits. Thank goodness. If you don't like the idea of chewing on wasps and wasp poop. Well, there it is. There's the story of figs. Now, here's the thing. Because figs are just flowers, you're fascinated with this, aren't you? Because figs are just flowers, they don't require as much energy to develop as fruits do. And so, you know, we get good production every year, regardless. And we don't need a lot of extra nitrogen. It just seems like the flowers are produced anyway. If you add a lot of extra nitrogen and other things to figs, it all it does is produces extra leaves. It doesn't seem to produce more flowers. The only thing a fig needs is a good mulch. And it needs a good mulch for a very specific reason. You've heard this from me before. I have to say it again. It needs a good broad mulch because the roots do better in cool situations and because nematodes are a huge problem. And that mulch helps to discourage nematode attacks, among other things. But I think, just in general, figs like a cool root run. That's as big as possible. That's why people used to say, you plant figs next to the house so that they can hear people talking. That was in the old days. That was when we kept our windows open. That was before we kept Fox News on all the time. That's the only talking they'd hear now, and I don't know that that would help their feelings any. This is about putting figs next to the house because in the old days, the roots could run under the house. That was before we had concrete slabs too, by the way. So when houses were on piers, they could run under the house, stay cool, keep away from the nematodes because the nematodes didn't like it under the house because it was too cool and not enough vegetation for them to thrive. There it was. So you have to imitate the same thing with your figs. That's why you're putting that big mulch around them, but you don't need to fertilize them heavily. And, you know, as it turns out, you don't really have to worry about rust, which is what's occurring this time of year. Just a funny little thing. Just a funny little thing. No, we like to hear people arguing, don't we? I mean, isn't it what we'd like to hear people screaming at each other? That's what figs like to hear, isn't it, David? All TV is that way. I'll agree. So, yeah, there it is. Let the figs hear you talk. Open your windows. It'll be good for you. And mulch around your figs. That'll be good for the figs. So there it is. Hey, folks, give us a call. 251-343-0106. Taxman has another take on it. I like that take. I like that take a lot, Taxman. It's very good. I won't repeat it. 251-343-0106. That's the number to call. Hey, you know, you could text us pictures as well. Text us pictures. of your garden and the problems that you're having, make sure they're in focus. Give me a little close-up. Sometimes I may need it. Give me a little bit of a distance view, too. And let's talk about what's happening in your garden. 251-343-0106.
I am a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going home no more to roam. I'm just going over Jordan. I'm just going over home.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to think about. You know, if you, I'm curious out there, and you guys can tell me. I'm curious about your tomatoes. My prediction is that everybody with fairly large tomatoes, at least that's close to the coast, has probably got big problems with those large tomatoes by now. They're probably not producing very well. The vines have got early blight. They may be outgrowing their early blight, maybe not, but they're not getting many tomatoes. Early blight's a disease that all tomatoes get. It's just inevitable. They always get it. It always happens late. That's, forget the name early blight. That's what they call it, but it happens late. It's because we see the world from the perspective of New England, where early blight happens early and in the earlier in their season, and late blight happens late. I don't know. Late blight happens early. It's weird. But early blight is what we call it, and it becomes a problem. And the tomatoes can outgrow it, but oftentimes, the temperatures are just so high that the tomatoes don't do well. They quit growing. And they quit pollinating themselves. So when temperatures, and it's not the daytime temperatures, it's the nighttime temperatures. We talk about that a lot. So when you're talking about this 2 degree centigrade increase in temperatures, which people are talking about globally, don't look at the daytime temperatures. Look at those nighttime temperatures. Tell me what's happening. That's an interesting story. That's a very interesting story, because those nighttime temperatures are increasing dramatically, and that means that it's getting to where tomatoes quit producing earlier and earlier in the summer, June and July. Even in late June, you can get some, the big ones quit producing. But listen, you tell me, and I'm interested, I'm curious. Tell me how your tomatoes doing. My prediction is that the small tomatoes, people with smaller tomatoes are still getting production, and they're going to get a big bump in production after this cool weather this week. People with larger tomatoes, the big fat tomatoes, I suspect you're not doing so well. So give me a report on your tomatoes. I'm writing about tomatoes for my garden column in the newspaper, and I made some predictions. Let's just see if they're true. And give me a call, because, you know, maybe I'm making stuff up. So let me know how your tomatoes are doing. Give me a call, 251-343-0106. Hey, we had a caller. Is Tara on the line? Yeah, Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, well, I wasn't going to say this because I got a question on something else. But if you want reports on tomato and peppers that we previously discussed, I told
yes.
you that I had gotten a celebrity that was already pre-potted and given as a gift last October. And it lived through the winter, and it produced through the winter. In fact, I just picked the last of the tomatoes, the spike hornworm attacks, which is something else that I have a question about. But I was about to go out and rip it up a couple of days ago because of the brown, you know, the stalks that are, they just didn't look like they were going to do anything. But
early blight, yeah, that's early
put
blight.
Out are thriving now. So it discouraged me from ripping it out.
Yeah, so it's so that's right. It is outgrowing the early blight. The early blight is working its way up the stem. Some
of
the new growth.
It never had blight.
Well, it had early blight, which is what the browning is, and there are many kinds of blight. Early blight just affects the leaves. It's a kind of fusarium that affects just the leaves.
Never saw that on the leaves. It went through the drought. And the drought is what killed it back because I couldn't keep up with keeping it watered. It's in a container, of course, not even a big container, maybe a 2 gallon container.
Well, that's an interesting way to deal with early blight is to make sure your plant nearly dies from drought and they won't get early blight.
Also, it's elevated on a turned upside down large pot. Worked out that way. You know, gardening is like that stuff. The habanero also, the peppers, which I got at the same time, it had gotten blown over in one of our tornadic little microbursts and broken off one of the large branches. So I thought, well, what have I got to lose? So I stuck that in a jar. This was winter, before winter came on. Stuck that into, but it's a very small soda, you know, like the half-size soda bottle, maybe 6 ounces. And it not only had put out roots and grew, but it actually has a little tiny fruit on it. It's about the size of my small fingernail.
Huh, good.
So, anyway, just to let you know, but can I ask my question, please?
Yes, ma'am, please do.
Nettles. In last week's show that someone had ideas and advice on cooking with nettles, N-E-T-T-L-E-S.
Well, so nettles is an interesting thing. We don't have that many true nettles this far south. We did talk about thistles, however. And thistles were... thistles was the subject. Thistles were the things we were going to talk about cooking, and we're working on that. I'm just experimenting with that. I found some new references. I told David Hubble we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Nettles are eaten. There's no question nettles are eaten. And the trouble is that nettles, as commonly defined, are very hard to find along the Gulf Coast. So. I wouldn't talk as much about nettles. We do have some nettles, however. I don't know how good they are. We have a relative of nettles that is fairly common in the Red Hills. And so I see it around Jackson, Alabama. I see it around Monroe County. Nettles.
Please?
Yes.
Are we talking about something that puts up a small head that's almost clover-like, but it's a little bit larger? It's maybe the size of the end of your thumb, and the bees go crazy for it.
Doesn't sound like a nettle. Doesn't sound like a nettle. I'm thinking about it. I'm listening. I got to think about what you're saying, but I think that... A thistle is different than a nettle.
The reason I'm calling that and asking is because someone who was a very seasoned chef and a dear, dear friend of mine for all of my life almost came over and looked at an area that I happened to be in charge of, and he was a chef in Louisiana. Also, Louisiana, Mississippi, all over the place, you know, graduate of CIA. He's no longer with us, and I love him very dearly and thank him. that he's the person who turned me on to the identification of it. He's the one who said to me, those are the chef's secrets.
Well, so I will tell you that I rarely...
He would know better than I, certainly.
Yeah, and he may know plants better than I know them. But I don't know.
Anyway,
we don't see a lot of
we
don't see a lot of common nettle or stinging nettle here, which is the one that people cook with and eat with. I'm curious as to what he pointed out. Okay, so he's got a name that you know it could mean anything. That's one of
he obviously used to cook with in the restaurant and other public facility. Colleges and things like that. So
we're going to be kind of lost here unless we get a picture or unless we get a name, because names is one of the problems with common names is that they could refer to a lot of things. I'm not sure what he was referring to as a nettle,
especially if it's a Louisiana plant.
Well, if it's a Louisiana plant, you just don't know, but it's interesting. Thistles are great. There's a lot of wild herbs out there that lamb's quarters that are absolutely delicious. There's several plants that could fit your description of a thumb-sized flower at the top that attracts bees.
It's not a flower. It's like a cone. It's like a small cone, like a small artichoke that would eat leaves.
Yeah,
it is not a flower.
Okay. Probably is a flower, but we'll figure one out.
Yeah, but I mean, it there's no bloom on it, is my point.
Well, okay. So, yes. Well, we'll talk about flowers and what constitutes a bloom when we come back. But we've got, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I'm not sure I can figure that one out. But we got to take a break. We're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. Hey, and let's come back, since we talked about this fig thing, let's talk about flowers when we come back. What is a flower anyway?
If it keeps on raining, then it's gonna break. And when the levee breaks, I'll have no place to stay.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain on my face. Hasn't stopped raining for days. My world is...
Okay, welcome back. Look at this. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We're going to talk about gardening. Sometimes plain gardening. That's all we talked about, figs. Nothing plain about figs, is there? Just plain old figs. But, so, got a lot to talk about. Hey, listen, I want to talk about names and flowers real quick. Names. I believe that the Bible says, you know, a lot of people say, if the Bible says it, it's got to be true. And what clearly the Bible says about in Genesis is that this thing that didn't have a name, the one who says, you know, I'm who I am. Don't ask who I am. I'm who I am. That thing in the Bible says to Adam, okay, I set this life in motion. It's your job to go out and name it. Do a good job. That's the implication. Maybe he didn't mean for Adam to do a good job. Maybe he just meant for Adam to goof off. But he said, it's your job to name them. If you want to live well, if you want to understand what's going on, you better do a good job of naming these things. And so this thing, this God, he didn't make species. Humans made species. They get to make the names up. they get to see the differences and distinguish them. God didn't tell us how to tell the difference. Humans are supposed to tell the difference. So humans have done a lot of things poorly over time, and one of the things that they do really muck up job on, a really bad job on, is coming up with names for things. So we got this name nettle, which could mean almost anything. And so we live, to use another biblical reference, in a Tower of Babel, because we use names that have no meaning. We did try to do a little better with Latin names, and that's good. But you got to understand that names sometimes don't have meaning, because we're not very creative. I always like to say that my daddy had horses, and for a long time, Dad thought it was kind of unseemly to think too hard about what to name your horse. You know, real men didn't give funny names to horses. So every horse we had was Joe Billy, and it got to be a really difficult conversation to figure out which Joe Billy we were talking about. Joe Billy or which Smokey Joe? I mean, you know how that goes. We do the same thing with plants, and so it's hard to tell what we mean. In general, the thing that most people call a nettle, a stinging nettle, does not, it's pretty rare in Alabama. There are really only a handful of examples of this particular plant, urtica, the stinging nettle, in Alabama. So we don't have a lot of it, not even a lot of it in Louisiana, not a lot of it in Mississippi. So there are things that may, to some people, look like nettles, and there's one plant that's called a false nettle that is not nettle-like at all. It's called Bomeria, and it's related to a plant that produces cloth. I have no idea whether it's edible. It's worth thinking about. But we just got to do better with names. And that's one of the problems we have, is that names sometimes don't mean anything to us because we didn't do a very good job, particularly in the South, of distinguishing which plants are which. We got 40 species of oaks. How many names do we have for those oaks? We are so bad. We're so bad. Listen, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, flowers. We're going to talk a little bit about what a flower is. It's another nomenclatural thing, another naming thing we have a problem with. But Cherie, let's talk about figs again. Let's get back on this fig thing. I'm listening. What's up?
Okay. Cherie,
you're on your speakerphone. You better talk just regular, because we'll get a lot of reverb.
In this car.
You there?
I apologize. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine now.
Question is, I live in North Mobile County. I planted a little fig tree about a year ago. Very small, actually. It looks sort of like a stick now, with a few leaves, and it's bearing a few little figs in my front yard, which it's in direct heat, direct sun. My thought was I'm thinking it's going to perish this summer. I thought digging it up and putting it in a very large pot so I could care for it easier, keep it watered more regularly. That was my question. What would you suggest to try to save that big stick?
Yeah, and some people do manage figs in containers, but it won't be easier in the long run. It's better to find a good place in the yard to manage that fig, because you're going to have to keep, trust me, I don't think it's going to be a good idea to try to manage it in a container. Find a good place for it. Listen, even in full sun, it's fine. Remember that you don't want a tree, you want a bush. If you make a tree out of it, when you're thinking about where to put it, If you're imagining that this is going to be a tree, you'll probably never be able to harvest the figs, because the figs will be too high above you. You're undoubtedly younger and spryer than I am, but you're not going to climb that fig tree.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So
I would be happy for it to just thrive and become whatever it wants to be.
Yeah, except you won't get any figs that way, but You can make it into a tree if that's what you want it to be, and just never enjoy the figs, which is too bad. to do that, you can leave it where it is. It'll be fine there, but you're going to have to mulch around it. That's all there is
okay.
to it. And
all right.
And mulch
That's
around
what
it
I wondered,
and water
it. How to treat it to try to save
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and just get the grass away from it. Pull that, the grass away
okay.
from it.
I think the grass is at least choking it.
Absolutely. So 3 feet on either side, no grass.
Gotcha.
That's a
6 foot okay.
circle. As it gets
right.
older, you can increase it to an 8 to 12 foot circle. If that's too big for your front yard, well, you could put it somewhere else. But
no,
mulch
no,
in there, once you remove the grass, mulch in there. And then if you ever decide you want to actually eat a fig, you can call me back and we'll talk about what you need to do to eat a fig. Don't grow a
Guess
tree.
What?
Make
I've
a
already
bush.
Eaten four.
Yeah, it's just that they'll be too big. They'll be too big if it keeps growing. So you gotta control the growth. But
okay.
mulching
so
is the key.
What I'll do is dig
that
the grass away, put mulch around it, maybe even loosen up the earth a little bit around it because that ground is very hard. In that
yeah,
area,
and,
very
and
hard.
And you can certainly do
clay
that.
In
and
it.
And yeah, and here's the thing, and probably less clay, just it's just hard.
It is.
As it dries
very
out,
hard.
It can get hard and compacted. Take a fork.
Okay.
A garden fork, not a kitchen fork, but a garden fork. It's got four
yeah.
tines, kind of looks like a garden, like a kitchen fork on steroids. It's a,
yeah.
you know, it's about chest high with four tines that are kind of stiff. And wiggle that into the soil. Don't try okay. to thrust it in. Just wiggle it in.
Okay.
And you'll see that it'll go into that soil and then lean back on it. And that cracks the soil. That will make it easier to remove the grass.
Yeah.
And it will also crack the soil. That's all you need to do. You don't need to turn the soil upside down. Remove the grass. Move the fork to another spot. Wiggle it in. Lean back on it. Remove the grass. It makes a ton of difference. And your fig, that'll make it a lot better for your fig. And then find a good mulch. Leaves or whatever will make
All
a big
right.
difference.
I use pine straw, if that's okay. I use a lot of pine straw.
Pine straw will work just fine. It'll work
okay.
just fine.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That good helped very much.
Keep
Thanks
me posted,
again.
Cherie. All right.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. So there it is. Hey, so... We talked about this flower thing because things that are flowers sometimes don't appear to us to be flowers. And that's because, you know, why do we think flowers are pretty? Well, it's because the plants that produce flowers that we think are pretty mean for us to think they're pretty. That's one way to understand it. Plants, you know, we have a hard time understanding plant reproduction. That's what we'll call it. And because we have a hard time understanding plant reproduction, it's because we think plant reproduction works just like our reproduction. It doesn't. But plants have to attract a third party to this reproduction party. And so here's how they do it. They do it by appealing to other species with their flowers if they need another species to help them with the pollination. So plants with really pretty and astonishing flowers that are in many colors or in many weird shapes that appeal to our eyes, those plants are producing flowers that are designed to attract other species like birds or insects that come to the colors, that come to the odors. You see what I'm saying? But some plants don't need to have flowers that are as showy as other plants. And they may not even have petals. A lot of plants don't have any petals at all. You know, those little petals. But that doesn't mean they're not flowers. So oaks have flowers. Oaks have flowers. You remember what an oak flower looks like? No, you don't. I can barely remember what they look like. Because they're not very... they're not very pretty. They're not very interesting. Because they're not really designed to be attractive to other species, because oaks are wind pollinated, so they don't have to look pretty. They just have to be designed to allow the pollen to be released by wind. That's why oaks are one of the worst sources of allergies. We can talk about that later. your good old live oaks, you got allergy problems in spring, look up at your live oaks. That's where the problem's coming from. But they don't have pretty flowers, but that doesn't mean they don't have flowers. It's just that they're not pretty to us. And thistles, let's call them thistles. Thistles are one of those flowers that don't have conspicuous petals. What they have are stamens that are very showy, and they're often purplish or reddish. And that's how a thistle is. It's just the stamens without any petals. Weird thing. But let's understand what a flower is. Every plant's got a flower. Just some are prettier than others. That's okay. Even the not pretty plants, they're good plants. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Put it in a big brown bag for me. Seal right around all the 70.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, let's welcome back to a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Listen, give me a call if you get a chance, and you better hurry because we're running out of time on this show. I got some great pictures from Johnny of what a flower looks like. Indeed, Johnny, they are flowers, some great hibiscus, really cool hibiscus there. Some beautiful purple coneflowers. You notice the purple coneflower, Johnny, is actually made up of those purple coneflowers. Actually, each flower is actually made up of many, many smaller flowers. Each one of those little pincushions on top, that little orange hedgehog on top, each one of those little pincushions is actually a separate flower. That's a composite flower. It's kind of useful to know. Whereas that hibiscus, that's just one flower. A little bit of difference between composites and other plants. So then the question was, so what is this nettle that we were talking about? And again, common names, you could go the wrong direction here. Dan is wondering if she's talking about crimson clover, except, oh my goodness, don't eat crimson clover. I don't think you want to. It's not a good idea. So I don't think if I were a chef, I would be encouraging people to eat crimson clover. Be a bad idea. I don't know that it's toxic, but it's not good for you, and it's not going to be good. So I wouldn't do crimson clover. So I don't think we're talking about crimson clover if we're talking about something that's edible. And then there's the question of white dead nettle. Dead nettles is a name we usually give. David Hubble suggested white dead nettle, and that's an interesting one, David. Dead nettle, again, common names are a problem. Is another name you, old name you hear for henbit, which is what we call it here along the Gulf Coast, Lamium and plexicauli. It's fairly common in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, henbit, but it has conspicuous flowers. So I don't think we're talking about henbit, and I don't know that we want to eat it either. So we're still out there. And white dead nettle, I don't know that you'd see that much in Louisiana, but I'm open. Hey, Tim, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Enjoying your show here.
Thank you.
I had bought a avocado plant from a local nursery in Alberta last year. And I had it in the pot all year because I wanted to be able to bring it in and not have it freeze or anything. And this year, I moved it in the spring. I moved it to a larger pot to do the same thing. But I noticed that the plant hasn't sprung any new leaves or anything like that. It's kind of like it's still green, still living, but it hasn't really blossomed or anything. And I'm afraid to put it in the ground because the last one I did never did anything and died on me. What would you suggest?
Well,
keep it in that pot for another year, or should I try to stick it in the ground somewhere?
Camellias are going to be much better in the ground. And we just need to find a good place for it to put it in the ground. And you may need to call me back next week so we can talk about your yard and figure out where that place is. But camellias tend to have, yes. And you do want some sunshine. You don't want it in too much shade. Okay. And you don't want the ground to be too wet, which it can sometimes be around houses, and that can cause some problems. At the same time, you want to make sure that it gets adequate water until it's established. I recommend planting in a bed that's been that has a, about a 2-inch layer of pine bark on top of it, if you're worried about your soil, and just and plant it even with or just below the level of that pine bark. Don't stir the pine bark in. Just leave it there, and then all this is going to be fine. Camellias tend to have two big growth spurts a year. One is in spring, and one's in fall. Mm-hmm. And a plant in a pot may not that's young may not be blooming at all, and particularly if it's not getting enough sunlight, or if it's not happy in that pot. But it can be very, you know, just like with the fig, I guarantee that maintaining a camellia in a pot is going to be harder than it is to maintain it in the ground. So let's find a place in the ground. Call me back next week, and let's talk about your yard and find a good place for that. Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I know the one I did last time, I planted it on the south side of the house to kind of keep the winter off of it, and it may be too close to the house, I guess. It didn't survive.
Yeah, 3 feet from the house at least. Always plant 3 feet away from the house, no closer than 3 feet. Let's talk about that next week, because we're going to run out of time this week.
Okay.
All right, good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right, great. George, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, hello. I just wanted to point out I have in my possession Wildflowers of America. And it's according to this book and the Smithsonian Institute, there are over 400 flowers in full color. Now, I think something else is interesting. I've heard you say or refer to Bermuda grass as a weed, but I have brochures that the Alabama Carpet Extension Service, which is the Alabama A&M and Auburn University, they refer to it as a grass. But I guess you can call it anything you want to. But I just wanted to point that out. By the way, out there on Schillinger's Road, there is an in Mobile, there is an Alabama Cooperative Extension Service piles of brochures that they will give you free. Matter of fact, I even call and they mail some out. Also in Bay Minette, they're sending me information on pruning of trees and flowers and what have you. I haven't received it yet. And also, I wanted more information. I don't know how you spell it or really pronounce it. An arborist. How do you pronounce it? Tree expert.
Say it again. Arborist. Yeah, yeah.
Arborist.
So we've got some, you know.
Yeah, we've how got, do you spell that?
Yeah, A-R-B-O-R-I-S-T. A-R-B-O-R-I-S-T.
Okay, I would have thought you spelled it with an O.
The, yeah, Arbor, A-R-B-O-R. So we only got a few minutes. We got a few seconds here coming out. We left a lot of things. You know, is it too late to plant zinnias? Give it a shot. See what happens. I think you can still do it in Mobile. I think you could do well with zinnias. Let me know how it goes, and we'll see. Greg, I love the new artwork of the grasshoppers in the Delta, the lubbers in the Delta. That is one cool picture that we'll try to get posted next week. It's really cool. Maybe we'll talk about those lubbers next week. Hey, good to hear from you guys. We'll be back next week. Give us a call.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
see the paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor.